What's up, everyone? This is Jay, aka Brother Soap, welcoming you to the 61st episode of the Bridgerton podcast.
Okay.
I am here with my homegirl, the biggest fan of Bridgerton to have ever Bridgerton.
Absolutely not, sir. You guys can go ahead and do all the hate on me. What? I hate that show.
I am just dragging a secret fight onto the internet for no reason. I'm going to rewind and say, I am here with my homegirl, my partner in crime, the Rona to my Marlon, Miss Lindsay Amanda. We proposed to each other, and then the soap gods made me stroke out. How are you feeling about how things are looking now for Rona and Marlon?
I would like to kick whoever wrote that.
Preach.
And see balls so hard they come out of his mouth or ovaries, whichever happens to be the case on that episode. Because it was like, yes, they finally got what they wanted. They finally both did what they had to do. They did their cute little nerdy moment. And then, oh my God, I forgot to write. Where is it? Falls down and has a small... What? Stop. It was like the minute I saw the shaky screen in his face and the left side of his face go down, I'm like, you are not doing this to me right now.
Yeah, it was definitely shocking. And, you know, I messaged you when I saw it frustrated like that. This is the trajectory for Rona and Marlon, you know, after the devastation that was their initial relationship after, you know, Rona cheated with Patty and then my best friends were broken up for years. And, you know, I came to accept her and Marlon together this time because I really did like them the first time before the whole unnecessary adultery with Patty thing. And I'm liking the way they vibe now. So the fact that, you know, Emmerdale kind of, you know, I felt like...
gave us a giant F you.
Well, I wasn't that impressed with the previous week's episodes. So the fact that they took from like that Friday to Monday, they kind of turned things around and had this heartwarming reunion where, you know, Rona and Marlon were proposing to each other, which I thought was perfection. For them to take that and then do the soapy thing and bring in that drama, it was ballsy. It was infuriating. And honestly, at the end of the day, I actually think it was a smart move because I'm fresh, you know, less than half an hour ago, I just finished watching Friday's episode of Emmerdale. This is the one where there were so many powerful scenes between, you know, Cain and Sam and Rona and her mother and Patty and Mandy, right? And I don't remember if it was the Friday episode or if it was Thursday, but there was also Rona and Cutie, Marlon's ex, blonde girlfriend to Jay, whose name, Laurel, yeah. There were so many good moments between all of them, and it was all centered around showing how those characters were viewing life differently because of what happened to their friend Marlon, who was struck down at a time no one thought that, you know, he might be. And then that's making people question their own mortality and their own decision making. And you know what? That was a good catalyst. And that is how it's supposed to be done on a soap. You don't do things to side characters who nobody cares about. Like, I think I was complaining about that on a couple of episodes. I don't remember what soap it was. But yeah, what were we going to say? Because I think you're going to say what I was thinking.
Yeah, because I was going to say, they do that kind of stuff to the main characters to make you want to, you know, what the heck did you just do to my this person? Because, I mean, like, I remember when Kane had the aneurysm, and I freaked out for days. I was like, no, you are not killing McCain.
Yeah, when it's the characters that we care about, like, it hits you, you know? So I know I have been, like, Marlon is one of my favorite characters on all of soaps. And in my entire time watching soaps, and I am 42 now, and I think I started watching around when I was 18 years old. You know what I'm saying? So to see this happen to that character, like the gut punch, I was just like, oh, God. So
don't kill my mama.
It is tough, but I think it's going to be a good story. And I think the last time a stroke story hit me like this was Patrick's on EastEnders. And we know that trajectory, that character had a long recovery period. But you know, today,
he's walking around and drinking.
Exactly.
So, getting away from his evil wife. Oh.
Good for that. So I'm hopeful that this is what ends up happening with Marlon, but I appreciate, you know, kind of initially how the fallout is affecting a lot of other characters. Because, like, I was also thinking, I know that had to do something about with Chaz and Charity's reunion.
Yeah.
And also Mary, I believe that's Rona's mother's name.
Yes.
Chilling with her bitchitude, being real with her daughter, and being that support that was needed. And I think that's excellent, you know. So, yes, I'm sad for my Marlon. I need him to pull through. But I'm very interested in seeing what Emmerdale does with this story, because as frustrating as it was to watch the love just fade into sadness, I think they have the potential to do a lot of good with this, so. We will see how it goes.
Yep.
We will see how it goes, shucks. All right, so if you all have a question about Emmerdale, or there ends up being something that we do not discuss today that you would have liked us to have talked about, head over to britishsoappodcast.tumblr.com to shoot us an ask, or hit us up on the Twitterations at UK Soap Podcast. So I push recording of the show back a week, which means I have like double, triple my what the hells and scenes of the week usually. I think I have about 14 what the hells, and I'm eyeballing it probably about 9 scenes of the week. So I'm interested in you going first so I can cut from my list what you say.
It's like, truth be told, I don't have that many because I'm gonna be truthful. I did sleep a little bit through it, but not a lot. So I did a bit from this week too. So one of my
yeah, don't feel bad. I slept through like the last 15 minutes of Friday's Emmerdale, and then I had to go back, and it was the best part of the week, of the episode. And I was like, oh, I'm glad I rewatched it. I would have missed so much.
Yeah.
So what do you have for your first what the hell for Emmerdale, ma'am?
Before this week, I was getting the whole Mina thing. We finally get Mina's, you know, hearing happening, and she comes out, you know, in her gray clothes. She's not looking cute and cuddly and everything, you know, like she normally would when she's off killing people. And she looks like she hasn't brushed her hair in 2 weeks. Everyone who was involved in some way are sitting up in the gallery just watching. And she's going guilty for all the charges and stuff. And then they get to the guilty, or then they get to the murder charges. And she looks up at everyone with this cheesy ass smile on her face and says, not guilty to all of them. And I'm just like, shit. This is going to go on forever. We're going to see more. So just seeing Mina around longer is my what the hell, because I just want her gone.
Yeah. I agree. Both Mina pleading not guilty and Mina blaming Manpreet for, I think, the Andrea murder. Those are both on my those are both on my what the hell list. I don't understand what Emmerdale is doing. We're done with this story. Like, part of
we were done with this story when she got arrested.
100%.
She could have just been arrested. We wouldn't have to see her again. The world would be great. You know, like with Gray.
I mean,
we don't see him anymore.
She could have been blown to smithereens in the explosion at the Woolpack, and we could have been done with this story, right?
Yeah.
I don't understand why Emmerdale is dragging this out. Like, I didn't understand the first odd beat, which is Charles deciding that the murderer, the serial killer, can be reformed by God, and that in order to get her to accept responsibility for her crimes, all he needed to do was to have a few therapy sessions with the mofo that killed one of the women he loved. Killed one woman he loved, held the other woman he loved hostage. But Charles turns into Boo Boo the Fool, like, I can rationalize with the serial killer because God. I'm just going to show her my trusty shiny Bible and her heart is going to be healed and she's just going to accept being in prison for the rest of her life even though she's insane. Like, it was idiotic. And so he's fighting with the whole town over this. His damn support groups that he's put together so that the victims of Mina can have a place to support were damn near destroyed because he's secretly going to the prison and stroking her hair and saying, oh, it's okay that you're a little serial killer because God. And then I think, I can't remember if he was, did he try to record her? I thought with the Bible thing, there was going to be he was going to try to record her confession. I don't think that ended up happening.
I think what she did was
she swapped out his Bible for a prison Bible so the people at Emmerdale could see that he'd been to the prison, think that he was talking to Mina, and then blow things up. Like, it's just exhausting. It's this character is done. She's killed people that we like. It's annoying. There is no need to continue and elongate this story. Sister Girl will probably get her a British Soap Award for Best Villain. Great. We're done with it. Let her live her life and go on to do something else with it. Because just staying on Emmerdale to draw out story to be annoying, it's uninteresting. We have seen the dun, 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 dun. We have seen people holding guns on her for 3 hours as she opens her mouth and puts her mouth around a gun and they don't shoot. We have seen all that foolishness. We do not need more extended Mina foolishness. Emmerdale has a ton of good stories they're telling. Mina gotta go. Done. Mm-hmm. Stop. No. So yes, totally agree on both counts. Yes. What else she got, ma'am?
We're gonna sidewind that and go to Manpreet now. Because, I like the fact that she's trying to get her head back on straight and everything, and everything's going great for her. And then suddenly, because, you know, the world thinks she's a killer, they're not going to go see her at the doctor anymore because she's a murderer and she killed somebody because that got out somehow. Probably in the newspapers that she was, you know, taken to the police station and questioned for the murder of Andrea. So it's like, okay, so now there's going to be online hate comments about something that didn't happen. And Manpreet is going to go shove herself back inside Charles's house in a curled up little ball. We won't see her for another month because she's not ready to leave the house anymore. And then you have Liam, who is basically, you know, egging her on to, you know, testify against her. And I'm like, dude, you're being her right now. You leave your house to go to work. You go home. You don't do anything but sit and mope. It's like they're doing the same. It's like they both need therapy. They need a monstrous amount of therapy, and they need it quick, or else they're going to kill each other. That's my thought about it. And I don't mean, like, kill each other, like, literally. I mean, like, one of them's going to talk to the other one. The other one's going to talk to the other one. I'm not going to testify. Why not? I want justice for my daughter. I want justice for me. You know? But we're not going to get that. I mean, I understand what he's trying to do. But he's making her feel like dirt in the process.
Disagree. No. So let me give you the love, and then I will give you where you and I diverge, because I was with you, then you turned into Ethan, and I was like, no. So that is on my what the hell list as well. I want to give you love. Like, it's so funny. It was funny to be watching this where, okay, all of a sudden Manpreet is getting online hate because of her sister's crime. And I'm just like, really? So people in this little tiny ass Emmerdale town are like negatively reviewing Manpreet online in some small village because she is seriously. I thought that was kind of ridiculous.
It's like, oh, Manpreet's not going to have anybody today because... Yeah, we're not going to go see her because she murdered somebody. Yeah, and what proof of that do you have?
Yeah, and who on Emmerdale hasn't been involved in some kind of murder? Get out of here.
Yeah, it's like everybody at some point, even the queen, or, you know, even, you know, the sweetest person in the universe has been involved in some way, shape, or form.
So, I do have some issues with Manpreet's portrayal. I thought initially how they had her a little skeptical that people in the town would blame her for her sister's crimes. Now, I thought that initially was valid, but then we saw the characters of Emmerdale supportive towards her and, like, welcoming her into the support group, and a couple were telling her, listen, we recognize that was Mina and not you, so don't even trip on it. And then she was able to continue to live her life. And I thought that was a good way to go. Yeah. It was acknowledged, and then we move on because, you know, blame is going exactly where it needs to go, to Mina. And I think the biggest part of, you know, the blame going the wrong place was when Priya was taking out her anger on Manpreet, and Liam helped her with that turnaround. So I thought that was excellent. So I love that. Where I have a problem, it's the Charlesifying of Manpreet. So we go from Charles being an idiot talking about me going and seeing Mina is going to, and saying God 50 times is going to make her confess.
And now, then she goes
Manpreet has gotten into her head that by failing to testify against the girl who is a serial killer, tried to kill her, tried to kill Vinny, held him hostage, killed about 72 other people, Manpreet, the doctor, right, the one who is supposed to understand mental health and all this other kind of stuff, because of some throwaway comment that some character said, like, I'm concerned about your mental health, she has decided in her infinite wisdom that the best way to ensure that you get justice for your sister serial killer's mm-hmm. crimes, as the only person who has heard this heifer say she has killed all these people, is to not testify and let it stand your sister's eventual lie, which she's already starting to spread, that you killed some people to help her out.
Mm-hmm.
It's insanity. It is insanity. And that Emmerdale had Ethan, who, you know, has mostly been popped up in getting Marcus's ass for the past couple weeks, right?
Yeah.
But Emmerdale has Ethan talk to Manpreet after her little breakdown where she's screaming in cars because Mina has pled not guilty and walking around outside at night like a weirdo, and all this because she has a surprise mental health break because helping get her sister sent to jail for being a murderer is so mentally exhausting that I guess it's best to shut the fuck up and let the heifer get released and go kill more people. What? So after she, because she's in that mind space, I see Ethan and Manpreet in the little, you know, Davids together or wherever they were. And, you know, they have a brief little scene, and I think, I figure the next scene is going to be, you know, Ethan and Manpreet talking, and Manpreet saying, you know, I'm concerned about, you know, testifying, and you know, nobody believing me, and my sister getting off anyway, and I thought Ethan, as the lawyer, was going to say, well, you know how important it is to, you know, give this evidence, and if you don't give it, you know, then she may get away, and how are you going to feel about that? Like, that's where I thought that Emmerdale was going. But no. Instead, we don't see what Ethan and Manpreet talk about. The next scene is Ethan bringing his ass to Liam's house and saying to Liam, so Liam, I noticed you in Manpreet's face telling her she needs to testify. First of all, your ass is unprofessional. How dare you as a doctor tell this woman that she needs to testify?
Yeah.
And I'm looking at the screen like, what? I know Ethan is not standing in Liam's house with a picture of his dead daughter over his shoulder in Liam's eye line of sight, whining to him about Manpreet's pain over testimony when Liam's daughter is dead.
Mm-hmm.
Ethan and Manpreet want Liam to empathize with Manpreet, whose child was not killed by Mina. But Ethan and Manpreet cannot empathize with Liam, whose child was killed by Mina.
Yep.
If we are going to have a conversation about who should empathize with who, I say more empathy goes to the guy whose daughter is murdered than the woman whose daughter was not murdered by her sister. Than Ethan, who has no children, and let's talk about his parents, whose father and mother are not murdered by Mina. No, we don't give a fuck about woman pain over this stupid, I'm not going to testify against a serial killer bullshit. No, she needs to testify so that heifer can sit down. Because if she does not testify, the heifer can get off and go kill more people. Will that make you feel better? Will that improve the mental health? Will that make Ethan feel better? Ethan, the man who was ballsy enough to sit in Liam's face and call Liam unprofessional and try to say that as a doctor, Liam should know that him being concerned about Manpreet and her mental health and manipulating her into testifying is a total breach of ethics, which so many assumptions and utter bullshit. Partially expected from a lawyer, but still. But the fact that Ethan was this character calling Liam unprofessional made me extra super annoyed, because not a couple scenes before he's having this conversation with Liam, Ethan's sitting in the cafe making puppy dog eyes at his client.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think their relationship has ended, right? But it ended 5 minutes ago, right? So I work in a profession where the relationship between client and therapist is paramount, right?
Mm-hmm.
It is so unprofessional, and it's like one of the highest forms of unprofessionalism to have any type of sexual relationship with your client. Even if your relationship has ended, and then you get into that relationship 6 months down the line, a year down the line, it's still a slippery slope. Like it, and it's, other therapists will frown upon you for that.
Yeah.
Ethan goes from, like, I remember the first time he does this, because my blood pressure was like through the roof. Like, Ethan and Marcus were talking, like, through, I think, the dad's will or some kind of paperwork, and like, Marcus had just signed something, and like less than 30 seconds later, like Ethan and him are talking about dating, and I'm like, what are you doing? Like you're doing work with him. What is this? This is ridiculous. And then in this exchange, so Ethan is all high and mighty in Liam's face talking to him about how unprofessional he is as a doctor. Not two episodes later, Ethan is having sex with markers at the Hyde where neither of them work. Like, just a public establishment. They get walked in on. But I guess that's totally professional, right?
Yep. 100%.
Now, I think Ethan and Marcus have chemistry. I think it's fire. I have long been interested in seeing what they do with this character because, you know, a black gay man right here, we do not have much representation on these TV shows. So I have been interested in stuff for Ethan. But I also pay attention when he's on that BS. And him and Liam's face talking about, you are so fucking unprofessional. When he has been unprofessionally lusting after this dude who he's now sleeping with for months, he can get the fuck out of here.
It wasn't even months. He hasn't even been on the show for 3 months.
I mean, get out of here. So, yeah, I was done. I was done. Yeah.
So, yeah. There's I can get behind that. I can get behind that 100% because that was actually... I was just sitting there thinking, I love these characters. And because of this Nina storyline, they made all of them stupid.
Yes. Yes.
I love Liam was like one of my favorite characters for the longest time. When he went to that police station and finally brought up his cosplay weekends again, I did that happy little grin. I'm like, thank you for bringing those up again. I missed it. You know, I miss happy, cheerful Liam. Yeah. He needs his justice for his kid, especially now that, you know, he doesn't have, well, he has Layla, obviously, but, you know, he doesn't really have anyone left on campus who gives a crap about
him. I mean, don't you dismiss Arcane like that. You know they BFFs now.
Yes, I'm aware of Kane's BFFs.
Yeah. And what else you got, Mama?
At first, I think this was one of the stupidest, yet best moments on the show in this past, like, 3 week period. So, they were gonna have this party for, you know, the engagement party. And they get everything all ready and set at the hall there, and because, you know, the B&B has rats and the wall pack isn't done, and because, you know, sexy Scotsman who ran away decided that he was going to try and help and water everything down, and, you know, be helpful in the worst way possible, and So you learn Charity and Chaz get into this huge big food fight, and then Lydia comes in. I hate Lydia. I hate Lydia with every fiber of my being.
Same.
For her face, when she stopped them was quite possibly the best face I've ever seen her make. Because it's just like, how dare you two do this kind of shit on this day? You two need to get back along again, or stuff's going to happen, and you guys are going to hate each other for the rest of your life. I'm going to go and take care of this mess above the head. I've seen her angry before, but not to the point where she gets hysterical over Ashy face. And just to prove a fact that, you know, they're both being really stupid, and they need to, you know, get back on track. Get back to where they need to be, because, you know, it eventually slowly happening, but I mean, like, that was quite possibly one of the weirdest, most perfect moments of what the hell in a good way that I've seen in a long time.
Yeah. If I'm not mistaken, the episode you're referencing is one of the best episodes that aired on Emmerdale over the past month, and that was a Paul Rondell episode. Before we recorded, I actually already had the title for the show, and it was "She Started It," because I'm pretty sure that was the episode.
She started it in unison.
Yes. I mean, Paul Rondell is a gift to soap creation. Like, every time I see his name attached to an episode, it's fantastic, and that was no exception. Because what happened was, the episodes before that, there was so much stupidity that was being done, and then here he comes with his golden pen and, like, ties everything together. We get that epic, I think, over-the-top showdown between...
It was the perfect kind of merging what the hell scene of the week thing, because I had it listed as both. Yes.
But the catharsis was needed, because I think somebody was like, are you going to break this up? And they were like, no, I think this is neat. Actually, no, I know what I'm thinking of, and it was something different. But, you know, it was just, it was perfectly imperfect, but a lot of the words that aired during that episode needed to be heard and were powerful, and I loved it. So, you know, at the time, I was like, okay, I need Paul Rondell to be writing more episodes of this show, because if he's making Lydia tolerable, and Lydia, like, I get
tolerable.
It, but I think she is a Ian McLeod, you know, creation, and, you know, she, I'm sorry, like Zach said back in the day, she will never be Lisa, so I can't with her all the time. But the episode overall I thought was good, and what's been happening on Emmerdale since, Charity and Ryan came together to buy the pub, and kind of, you know, she's been beefing with Chaz because of it. I think it's been good television to watch. And now that it has reached a resolution, praise, I think the time has been worth it, because there were a lot of things that needed to be said. But at the end of the day, Marlon's downturn, again, is helping family members to see that, see, all the foolishness we're doing, that is inconsequential. What is consequential
is
family. Yes. And I love it. I love it. So, yeah, I feel you on that one, baby girl. I feel you. Okay. Well, let's go to me. I guess, so you actually did not mention a few things that I have on my list, and I see a name repeated a lot, so I'll get to that in a minute. But let's, since I already talked about Ethan and Marcus, let's talk about two more things with them. So I totally forgot the storyline where Marcus was dating someone who had HIV, but I think I remember now saying these words to you, but when, so Ethan and Marcus, they got back together. So I guess let me go in order of what happened to make this make more sense. So the first Ethan related what the hell that I have, well, the first one I had I already talked about, but the next Ethan related what the hell that I had written down was Ethan acting all distressed over Marcus being uninterested in him, and, you know, getting this whole thing where, like, he was, like, asking Rona for like, there was this weird thing where they were looping in Rona to, like, grant permission for Marcus to, like, date Ethan. It was just all annoying and weird, right? Because Rona wasn't being real with Marlon about who Marcus was, and she was trying to keep him from people, and Marcus didn't feel welcome to the village because, you know, he knows his father's a rapist and is known as a rapist there, and Kim and Rona and Marlon and everybody's trying to make him feel bad, which,
like garbage,
understandably,
yeah.
Right? So, but Marcus is mildly interested in Ethan, which, you know, again, dynamic here. Ethan is a lawyer who understands the code of ethics. Marcus is an electrician who probably doesn't have the same code of ethics. So, you know, I really can't fault Marcus for, you know, trying to date a lawyer. But, you know, Ethan, even at his age, not understanding the complications of, like, you know, dating somebody that you're a client with, that's a problem. But anyway, You know, he makes another pass at Marcus, and Marcus is like, yeah, bro, look, I'm not interested. I don't give dudes second chances. I'm about to bounce anyway. I got to go do something other for a couple weeks. So he takes off. And then Ethan is acting like somebody shot his puppy. I'm just like, what? Dude, this is the age of Grindr. You can get on Grindr, Scruff, Jax, you're black. You know, you can get on all these apps. And you could find a dude to have sex with in 2 seconds, right? Anybody can have somebody to have sex with in an hour. Straight folks got the Tinder. Y'all can, I think gay people can use that too if they want. Y'all can get anybody you want in 2 seconds, right? And Emmerdale really did not do this big thing where they showed like some Bridgerton-style attraction building between Ethan and Marcus the same way it was building between Anthony and I have to look up homegirl's name because it's been too... It has been... I just stopped watching the show yesterday and I've already forgotten. But I am going to... I'm looking it up... Because I need to say it because this is Bridgerton weekend. And for those of you listening who loved season one of the Bridgerton and have not seen season two of the Bridgerton and were thinking, oh my God, I can't watch season two because what's his name has left the show. Do not do yourself that disservice. It is excellent. It is better than season one. And the tension they set up between Anthony and, oh God, what is this queen's name? See, Anthony, I have loved since season one, so I have had a year to remember his name. Now, my new... Sharma. I should remember. I know her last name is Sharma, which I kept thinking of because I was thinking of the Sharmas on Emmerdale. So the new love interest for Anthony is a Sharma. Let me say the new love interests, plural, for Anthony are Sharmas. And Kate. Kate is his love interest. All right. There you go. So... and wouldn't it be interesting if, like, Kate Sharma was related to Jay Sharma, and she pops up on Emmerdale. Anyway, so, the same love between Marcus and Ethan had not been built up the way it's built up between Kate and Anthony on Bridgerton. And anyone who has watched season two of Bridgerton will understand exactly what I'm talking about there, right? So, the fact that Ethan was acting all that goddamn distressed over some dude he had known all of 3 seconds. It was ridiculous. It was ridiculous. I'm like, dude, get an app, unzip, beat it off, go on about your business, right? You just be proud to know this guy. It just stop, right? So that was what the hell number one. Then what the hell number two? So he comes back. So Marcus comes back after a couple weeks. And, you know, Ethan is doing his whole sulky brother thing. And Marcus is like, wait, why did you think I was uninterested in you? And I'm sitting there watching TV like, bro, because you told him like you wasn't interested in him and you had to dip. Like, that's what you said like 2 weeks ago.
I had a job, dude.
I thought it was great. I was like, yeah, bro. I'm like, yeah, let that brother know. You don't need to be messing with me. I'm your client anyway. Well, I think the writers of Emmerdale must have plucked the you know, heat. So I'm glad they're kind of wiping that away, but he was pretty firm, like, I'm done with your ass. And I wasn't mad at it. But anyway, so now Marcus is back like, bro, why did you think I didn't want to sleep with you when I totally told you I don't give people second chances and you're trash? Right? So Ethan's like, yeah, you're hot and my brain is gone. So, yeah, I'm going to forget all that. So anyway, so, you know, Emmerdale gives a nice explanation. Marcus told Ethan those, you know, dismissive words because he was really thinking about his ex and it was a tough relationship, a single tear falls. Ethan then talks about how he refers to the storyline that, you know, the last love interest storyline of his that got on my nerves. He refers to how he was dating this guy who was hot as hell, agreed, who he hooks up with quickly. It was hot. And then the next day, he drops like Aaron dropped Finn the next day because the guy's a construction worker. And I was just like, what? What's wrong with you? Y'all got chemistry. What? So he says these words to Marcus after Marcus tells him, and I'm an electrician. So, and then Emmerdale really doesn't do anything to like explain to the audience how all of a sudden Ethan has gone from some entitled lawyer dude who, oh, I'm too good to date builders and electricians, Like, they have done nothing to explain how he's gotten over that and he's now cool having sex with electrician boy off in the hide, right? And I think the real is guys get horny, they start having sex, right? Like, that's the explanation.
Yeah, pretty much. There's a hot guy there. And, you know, he has feelings. Let's just, you know, let's take care of it together.
But it's the exact same situation that he was in a couple of months ago. So whatever, it's fine. It's hot. I like it. I'll give it a pass. But it's still kind of a what the hell, because it's like, okay, like, there's nothing explained to, there was nothing given to explain why this would work and the other guy didn't. So, okay, that's ridiculous. And then he brings up the whole thing about the guy having HIV. And I had totally forgotten about that side of the story, because all I was thinking at the time was, wait, wasn't that Finn's storyline? And so then I Googled, and yeah, it was. Because you remember, Finn had that cute nurse, Darren, who was HIV positive. And I liked Darren. And I liked Finn with Darren. And Emmerdale just let that fizzle away. The same way in this storyline. I liked Marcus. I can't remember the guy. I think they hooked up, and I think that the guy that Ethan hooked up with, his ex told him after the fact that he'd come up positive for HIV, and then the guy also came up positive for HIV, and then he told Ethan, and Ethan got tested, and Ethan ended up being negative. And so I was thinking, oh, okay, well, are we going to get an exploration of gay love and the possibility of HIV? Because I really haven't seen that. I think we've got that on Hollyoaks, but it's been a while since I've heard. Because John Paul is the HIV positive person in that situation, if I remember correctly, right? Because he got positive and Steve was not, right? You remember back in the day?
I thought Steve was HIV. No, I don't remember.
Because I think Steve got... Let me Google this. Because
like I think Steve got HIV after... Well...
I can't remember what... But see, it's been so long. It's been so long. Let me do. See,
I don't think John Paul is HIV positive.
It says Steve HIV. Okay, so it's Steve that's HIV positive. All right.
Steve was HIV positive.
And see, this is the thing. So
he got it after his drug problem, and he ended up sleeping with a bunch of people all at the same time.
You remember the episode I'm talking about where him and John Paul went to the clinic at the same time. They both got tested. And I thought it was John Paul that was positive and Steve that wasn't. But see, even the fact that I'm struggling to remember this at this time speaks to how soaps need to do a better job when it comes to showing the reality of HIV positive life and love. Because you know who I'm never confused about who is HIV positive when I talk about Robin and Stone. Exactly. Because that was a love story focused on Stone's HIV positive diagnosis and Robin loving him even though her status was different. I've been looking for more of a story like that to be done on British soaps, and specifically Emmerdale, because now this is the second gay storyline I can think of with Emmerdale where you have a new character that's introduced as HIV positive, or, you know, and Marcus and his but I think Marcus's date, it did end up being HIV positive. I keep saying Marcus. So Ethan's date was diagnosed as HIV positive and Ethan wasn't. So between Finn and Darren and Ethan and the guy that he hooked up with, there was the potential now two times for Emmerdale to have an HIV positive character with a character that was not HIV positive. Hell, they both could have had HIV and we could have seen Ethan dealing with HIV, as well as the guy that he was dating at the time. But this show seems to shy away from that. So, you know, Darren kind of went away. And Ethan's ex went away, but, you know, and date, not really ex. And now we hear Ethan tell Marcus, you know, well, you know, I dated this guy, and then I hooked up with this guy, and then he told me that he was HIV positive. And then Marcus has this throwaway line where he's just kind of like, and now you're going to tell me you're diagnosed with HIV. Like, the way he said that is like, the thought of an HIV diagnosis is this thing to be flippant about in the gay community, when it's really like one of the things that keeps people in the closet, it's probably one of the things that we end up being most empathetic about. And yep. for those of us who have big fucking hearts, you know, we have a lot of love and support for anyone who is concerned about the diagnosis, because the thought of potentially getting HIV/AIDS is one of the biggest barriers to people coming out of the closet or accepting their sexuality, because it's such a huge issue just globally, right? And uh-huh. I don't understand why Emmerdale keeps shying away from dealing with that story, you know? So I was what the helling again, because I'm like, okay, we got unprofessional Ethan here, and now we got Marcus acting like, okay, if he had an HIV diagnosis, oh my God, this is a big thing, like, I don't understand. So I don't know that the actors were thinking about that. I don't know that the show was thinking about that. But I just kind of felt, I don't like what's happening with this, you know? So I'm going to, I wasted all that time saying all those words about how I was annoyed with Ethan. And that thing that Marcus said, the little throwaway HIV line, that was the first thing that annoyed me about Marcus. I have loved everything about Marcus since he started. And mostly, I've liked Ethan. Just, I questioned his romantic choices, and I questioned his talking to Liam after Manpre, right? But I cannot deny those two characters have a ton of chemistry. And if Emmerdale centers them and has them as a mature couple, and I mean that, you know, we don't have Marcus setting up Ethan for murder, and then Marcus sleeping with Charles, and then, you know, being all about, you know, Ethan and not understanding why Ethan won't give him another shot. Like, I'm trying to do Robert and Aaron, you know. If, as long as we don't have a Rob Ron foolishness, I'm not. Good. I need mature, I need quality story. And from what I've seen from the current team writing Emmerdale, they've been really good about writing that. So I need more of that with Ethan and Marcus, because I feel like Marcus's characterization has been pretty sound from the beginning. Ethan, except when it comes to love for the most part, has been pretty sound. I'm interested in them and them growing that and not making either of them stupid, because that will annoy me.
Of course they'll be made stupid.
No, don't jinx it.
I'll jinx it too. No. 10 bucks next week, something stupid will be said and they'll be walking away from each other.
I mean, baby girl, that's just me wasting my money, because like, I might as well give you $10, because they have made so many people stupid over the past 2 weeks. You know what's coming. You know what's coming.
Oh, yeah, I do.
Shucks. Well, let's talk about some other stupid stuff. Well, before I get to the stupid men, let me do more Rona stuff, because we already talked about Rona some. Okay. The other what the hell thing that I had involving Rona also includes Patty. And this is like Rona and Patty both like Forrest Gump running away from Marlon after he's in the hospital having his stroke and like obviously needing his best friend and his fiance there. And the scenes that I'm talking about, so with Patty, you know, everybody was going to the hospital after Marlon's stroke, but Patty was not going. You know, me watching as a fan and knowing how much I love the partnership between those two guys, I could see, you know, what Emmerdale was doing. Like, that's his boy, and he's real sad, and he doesn't want to see his friend like that. And so he's given himself every excuse not to go see his friend in a state that is different than he knows his friend is. And that was tough to watch, you know?
Yeah.
But then he went, and I thought that was solid, but then he was kind of like, you know, asking the nurse, like, well, before he went to the nurse, that was later. The first thing he did, so he's talking to Marlon, talking about his feelings, and then his homie opens his eyes. And then Patty's like, Marlon, you're awake? And then he changes, and he's like, are you even in there? And then, you know, Marlon, you know, can't really move and stuff. And so then Patty just legs it out of the hospital. I was like, bro, what are you doing? He just had his stroke like 5 minutes ago. He just had surgery. Can he get a minute to like recover? And Patty's just like acting like the dude is dead and they're just running away before, you know, people come in with a casket. I'm like, calm down, bro. So I didn't like that. Because he's like running out of the hospital. He's awake. And then he's just running off in a huff. I'm like, okay, bro. And then Rona. So Rona, she has been more supportive. She has been there for April. She's been, you know, keeping her mom in check. She has been there for Marlon. But, you know, so Rona's there. She's with him as he's trying to communicate and everything like that. And she's seeing he's having a hard time. I'm watching it get mad at this nurse who has decided that the same man who is having a hard time blinking yes and no, what he really needs is a pen and piece of paper, because if he can't talk and blink, writing is going to be exactly what he needs to do 5 minutes after his stroke. Anyway, so, you know, Rona's there, you know, being there for her boy. And then the doctor is talking about, okay, I'm going to do an assessment now. And then Rona's like, oh, well, I guess I'm going to choose the assessment time to leave. Because if I leave now, there will be no one there but a doctor who I don't know who can tell me what the hell happened. I'm like, what? Why would you leave before the assessment when you, as the other half who is able of talking and communicating and watching, and you're going to have to care for this man, you can see how his progress is going just by standing there and watching. So I thought it was sad when, you know, the scene comes and it's just Marlon by himself who can't communicate in there with this doctor who is doing the physical assessment, but he has no one there but this woman to monitor how he's doing or see how he is or read his mood. She doesn't know him. And I'm like, why did they make Roland Eve? What are you doing? So, you know, I think it was, you know, Emmerdale trying to show that people feel complicated things when, you know, loved ones get sick in the hospital. But I was just like, I wanted to handcuff Marlon. I mean, I wanted to handcuff Patty and Rona to that bed and make them stay there and be there with their boy. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
That's how I felt. How did you feel about those scenes? I don't know if you read their departures the same way.
You know, I can understand why Patty did what he did. Mm. I mean, like, that scene, like, when he is sitting there and, like, it was, I think the episode before, you see Bear for, like, the first time in, like, 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
And he starts talking about how he had a friend who was a referee who had a stroke and was like, oh, he was in the hospital for a long time and he got out and he was never the same guy again. And Patty was like, oh, that's supposed to make you feel better, is it? And you know, he does not, or Bear was not making him feel any better. So when he says something later on the next day, that made him think like, hey, dude, I'm finishing work here. I'll go and visit him when I'm ready. You know, it's like, I was afraid he wasn't ever going to be ready. I was afraid he was going to wait until he was out of the hospital to actually go see him. Because that's kind of like one of those things where, you know, you're too scared to see how it, like you said, you're too scared to see how, you know, his best friend who he's been standing next to for years and years and years is just laying there, that can basically only think to himself at this point, thinking, hey, dude, say these words, say these words, say these words, and
that
you can't.
Good, baby. That was good screening. Or cinematography. You know, I don't know how to say it, but the way that particular scene was shot, you know, with the stroke happening and us hearing his internal thought process, ooh, that was powerful. Emmerdale did that. And that was my
scene of the week, too. So I'm like, if they keep doing that throughout his entire flipping stroke storyline, I'll be for it, because that was beautiful. But it's just like, you don't want to see your best friend in that state when he can't communicate with you, he can't talk to you, he can't, you know, play games with you, he can't do... That would freak you out.
Yeah.
I mean, like, if I have a best friend who lives in Hawaii, if she has a stroke, I can't just automatically spend $600 and say I'm going to Hawaii to see my sister. Right. She just had a stroke. Right. You know, but I mean, like, yeah, they're right in the village, but they've known each other for so long that if he saw him the way he saw him then, yeah, I'd run out too.
Yeah, it's tough.
I'm sorry. I would. I would run out too.
And, you know, like for a lot of us, like I wasn't thinking that way before you said it, but, you know, some people will do that too. Like if they don't want to have an emotional breakdown in front of a person. Now, I think had Emmerdale had him run out and then it kept the camera on him and you saw him crying. Now, I think I would have felt a little bit better. And I think that's more like what happens in real life, because people don't want your loved one to see them upset in front of them. You know what I'm saying? So I'm going to run out and I'm going to have my breakdown and then I'm going to come back and have my shit together. So I feel that. But I think, you know, the episode ended with him leaving. Like he was walking and he walked off camera and then the credits rolled. And I was like, huh? Like, what just happened? So yeah. Okay. Your explanation makes me, what the hell, that less.
But for Rona though, I think what she did, but I mean, like, yes, they just proposed to each other like a day and a half, 2 days before. They love each other, all that stuff. But I would be that person who, like, if I was going to have an emotional breakdown, have somebody there to go in for me. Like, you know, like, she had her mom. Mm-hmm. Her mom and Marlon get along, you know, okay-ish.
Yeah.
April's there. April's old enough now to know, you know, what's going on. She's a teenager now. She could sit in there and watch the daughter get the assessment and tell Rona what happened later. Mm-hmm. Not just leave the poor kid, mind you, the doctor might have said, sorry, we can't have you in here right now, right, or something.
Right.
But you know, it's just like they've known each other for a long time, and you know, yeah, they love each other, but you'd think that, you know, she'd stay. So yeah, I actually agree with you on that. But I think that if she left, she should have got somebody who, you know, doesn't have as much of an emotional mean, like, a lot of people have an emotional attachment to Marlon. I think everybody in the village does, but like less of one.
Yeah.
To, you know, ask questions when they come up so that they could tell Rona what was going on. Hell, even have Laurel go in there.
Yeah, I hear that.
Have somebody who was an ex to him or somebody who was close enough to know him well enough to go in there and talk with the doctor through the assessment so that they could tell Rona what was going on so that she could go and have her emotional break as well. Mm-hmm. But
as a caregiver, you do need those breaks, and that's important as well. I just was thinking because it's like the first assessment, like you'd want to be there and see and know what's going on, you know. And yeah, I think I've got a lot on my mind because I've got some strong opinions when it comes to how people are cared for in medical centers. You know, that's part of the work that I do, and I know that there are a number of places where the healthcare system has a ton of work to do, and I think families need to be more involved in the medical process so that they can know what's going on, because a lot of times family ends up offering care to individuals that are recovering from things like strokes, but they don't always have the preparation because they aren't in the loop in the way that they need to be, you know. But yeah, definitely, like her mom, I don't think I would have put April there because, you know, that poor baby already had to find Marlon.
Yeah, she found him.
But you know, you're right. I think her mom being there, I think that would have been great. And another way to make sure that character became more deep, because when she came to the show, she kind of annoyed me because I could tell there was tension between her and
100%.
But it wasn't until that Paul Rondell episode where she talked about how she lost friends to COVID. She lost her friend, I think it was her neighbor, to COVID.
Her friend Phoebe.
And then she realized with that. And I gave kudos to, you know, Paul Rondell for having COVID brought up and the reality that it is killing people brought up, because we're living in a world where, you know, in the U.S., so the uptick that is already in the U.K. and in Asian countries is starting here now. So, you know, these next couple of weeks, I'm probably sure, you know, our numbers are about to go up. And I'm sure people will be talking about the importance of wearing masks again after the government stupidly told everybody to take them off. But I appreciated that reality of, you know, the using that character to say, look, people out here dying of COVID. And the fact that my friend died of this made me think about the things that I, you know, was neglecting in my life, and I realized that that was you as my daughter, and I wanted to be here for you. I thought that was so goddamn powerful. And so since that time, there has been a couple of moments, because that character, Mary, kind of goes back and forth between being silly and bitchy, but also being an emotionally complex and deep woman. And since the stroke, I see the complexity coming back. So I think her being there to watch and be that person for her daughter, I think would have been good. But Emmerdale still has her that way. You know, on Friday, the episode's ending with, you know, her talking to Rona and letting her know she's going to be there for Rona until until Marlon gets better. And she was kind of joking. She was like, if having a mother-in-law from hell is a motivation to make somebody snap to it, right? And I just thought, no kidding. So good, you know. So I like Mary, and I'm glad she's on the show. I think she's a force, and I'm here for it. But yeah, I agree with you. Having somebody there, I think, was important. And what I see Emmerdale have doing the past couple weeks, you know, back when Kate Oates was in charge, it was like, make one character the most annoying character in the world. So I remember, like, Adam was one of them. He was just uncharacteristically insanely evil, and I just wanted him to die. And she kind of went around and did that with a singular character, and then kept it moving. On Emmerdale, it seems like their trajectory is to make a few different characters markedly more stupid than they usually are to frustrate the audience.
But then hashtag Liam.
Come on now. hashtag Chaz. Hashtag Charles. Hashtag Jay. Hashtag Marlon. I'll get to that in a minute. But
oh, yeah. We got that. Yeah.
But then Emmerdale redeems them because those characters end up seeing sense at the end. Like, Charles tells his son, I was so stupid to think Mina was going to change. You know, like that kind of stuff, you know? So, yeah. And I see that with Mary, because Mary was a hot mess. Then that Paul Rondell episode grounded her. Then she was doing some hot mess stuff again. But since the stroke, she's been back to grounded. So this trajectory, and it's quick, because I think we've watched a month's worth of shows, and we've seen quick progress. Like, we're not having to see somebody being a fool for 6 months, except Mina. and before waiting
it's
for redemption.
Like, the faster it goes, the better.
Yes.
It's like, yeah, I agree.
100%. 100%. Yes. I have already talked about the Charles version, which annoyed me with him being stupid over Mina.
Yep.
I remember, so I have on my notes, I have Jay, Charles, and Marlon man pain. So I don't remember Jay's right now. I think I tweeted about it, so I'm going to check Twitter as I say this. But I'm going to start with Marlon, because he was the first character that I noticed over the weeks that did this. So when we left off the last recording, Marcus had told, you know, Rona he wasn't about to be playing games, and he wasn't going to stay out of the village just because she told him to. He's a grown man. He's going to live his life. And if she wanted to know the truth, what she needed to do was tell Marlon who he was, and so they could have that conversation. So the Monday where you and I started, she tells the truth of that situation to Marlon. And I thought it was fantastic, because we did not need it to wait.
No.
But then I had a problem with Marlon's reaction. Because the same way I was just criticizing both Manpreet and Ethan for not centering the fact that, you know, Liam's daughter was murdered. And they're in his face asking him to, you know, put all of his emotions to the side to worry about their pain, right? This is what Marlon did with Rona. Rona is telling him, you know, my ex who raped me, contacted me, said he's dying, wanted me to get in touch with his son. I did this. I did not feel the best about it. I wanted to tell you about it, but, you know, it was tough, and I kept it a secret because I didn't want to hurt you. Rona says all this, and Marlon's like, but my feelings! Dude, this woman you claim to love was raped by this asshole. He's on his deathbed. He asked her to reach out to his son. He did not ask her to stab you and murder April. Okay?
Yeah.
So calm down. This is not about you. How about if you love Rona, you get over yourself and your man pain where you're storming away from her, not sleeping at your house. I think he was chilling at Patty's and had to have both Patty and I think also, I feel like Billy said something to him that was helpful, but he had to talk to them to realize, oh, maybe I shouldn't be an asshole to the woman who was raped by her ex-husband. Like, I don't think it should have taken him a day. He could have just expressed, baby, listen, I wish you would have talked to me about this. I understand what you're saying. Please don't do this in the future because I'll be hurt by it. But at the end of the day, you were hurt by this man. You're my girl. I got your back. That's how that conversation should have went, you know. Now, it's a soap opera. I realized they were going to be a little melodramatic, but I was just like, Marlon,
why?
You are upset that she kept a pretty much inconsequential secret in your life. She was raped, bruh. She was abused, bruh. Like, there is no comparison when it comes to levels of pain. Shut up. So
it's like, yes, you were thrown in jail for a period of months because you were framed for
boo-hoo.
It. But
boo-hoo.
She got the word. She got real the brunt of it.
Real talk.
So.
Yeah. So yeah, you know, and see, for me as a viewer, I think we were skipping through, I know I didn't watch all the time that he was in jail. We skipped some of it. And not yeah. that I care, even if I watched every episode where he was in jail, you going to jail and her being raped, no, I don't care. No, I'm sorry. Her rape trumps. Like, I know one emotion is supposed to be worse than another emotion. No. Rape
trumps murder.
Sorry. I just, no, don't care. No. So, yeah, I didn't have time for his man pain. I didn't have time.
Yeah, it was like Kim's reaction too. I was just like, don't care.
Right.
Rona was raped.
Right.
It's like, yes, your boyfriend who happened to be in love with Rona at the time was murdered.
Yes.
But,
yeah.
Not sorry.
Exactly. Yes. Okay. I did take a note of this on the Twitter, so I see why I have Jay here as well. So Jay got outsmarted, and then he got pissed. And who was he pissed at? He was pissed at Laurel and Kim, and who's the recast? And it recast Bernice's daughter?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. Because where we left off last time, Jay was being an idiot and was trying to evict God and everybody to get his debts paid off and also get Laurel to keep her house, because he was like trying to evict his dad and Priya so that he could get money to help Laurel keep her house, or some foolishness, because of, you know, he couldn't afford his fine from the hide or whatever. So he develops this plan to he goes to Kim. He goes to Kim, who agrees to help him out if he will just sign away his share of the hide and give it to her, and then he will just she will just give you know, Laurel the money necessary to, you know, buy or mortgage the house, whatever deal they got going on. So at first, Jay, who supposedly loves Laurel and was so hurt that his actions made the family homeless, he was like, how dare you? You want me to give up my livelihood? And Kim's like, oh, I thought you wanted your girl to have a home, bro. Like, what? So he does the thing. Because he's trying to make a grand gesture to Laurel, who is not impressed because this mofo just stole from her and threatened, you know, her the financial security of her children. So she wasn't having it. She was like, I don't want that house. I don't want anything you need to do. And then Jay got, like, I don't want anything having to do with you after what you did to me. And then Jay gets offended, like, how dare you treat me this way? I gave up my business for you. Girlfriend was like, I didn't ask you to do that.
You could, yeah, because now they're having him do waiting and stuff.
I was like, yes, she asked you to do nothing. What she gave you was her trust, and you broke it. You don't get to do one grand gesture and just be straight, bro. No, that ain't how it works, you know? So then, who is Bernice's daughter? Is it Gabby?
Gabby.
Okay. So Gabby, you know, is upset by the whole situation. And she ends up around the same time that, you know, Jay goes and talks to Kim. She ends up working it out to where she can help Laura out, because I think she gave up some shares of Kate's, of her business interest with Kim, and was basically able to secure the money necessary to get Laura what she needed to keep the home. And so this happens after Jay has signed away his shares. So Gabby and Kim, I think, were there as well, get to go to the house and tell some kind of way. Laurel and Gabby and Kim were around to let, you know, Jay know the house is good. It's not going anywhere. The women worked it out. And Jay is all upset because this is what you accepted and I gave up my job. Well, I want my job back because y'all worked it out. And Kim and him are like, no, you shouldn't have signed away your shit. That's mine now. And he's mad.
Yeah, it's like, this is my place now. If you want a job, you're going to do whatever is necessary.
Dude, this was all your fault. If you handled your responsibility and had your money, all right. If you handled your responsibilities and handled the money that you needed to handle, you wouldn't have been in that situation. If you had not stolen from your girl, you wouldn't be in that situation. But the character of Jay is always quick to get irrationally upset when he has caused the bull that he is going through himself. Ridiculous. So I didn't have time for his man pain either, and I was like, I laughed so much when them girls like got over on him. It was fantastic. So I had no time for him and his foolishness. No time for it at all. Okay, we're on the last of my what the hells. We're going to go to the one that does not include my repeat performer, and then I'm going to end on my repeat performer. So I got issues with Billy Dawn and this whole damn adoption ask. Okay. Mm-hmm. So, the first half of it. Billy just beat the crap out of Dawn's ex over some Mina-involved foolishness, right? So they got to go to jail over it. He thinking he going to catch a case. Off screen, the boyfriend is just like, the ex-boyfriend is like, nah, don't worry about it. And so Billy is off the hook. Cool. Not 3 seconds after that happens, all of a sudden, Billy's like, no, he's married to Dawn now. I get it. But he's like, listen, things are going well with me and Lucas. I want to adopt him. Dawn's like, okay, cool. But, you know, we have to get permission from the deadbeat ex. And I was just like, what? So then they go over to this guy's house for the first time since Billy has beat his butt, just to like sweet talk him into signing over his parental rights. And I was just like, how inconsiderate is this? Like, first of all, it's unnecessary. Like, you're married, you're the stepdad. That's good. You don't need to like immediately, like a couple months ago, you were in legal trouble because of this dude. And now you think you're just going to go to his pad and like get him to sign over his son, right? So for soap reasons, they had him agree to this. Why? Because he wanted Dawn in on some foolish scheme to help him get money to pay off debts that he had, which ridiculous, but it was a soap. I was like, okay, whatever. So anyway, so it looks like Dawn is really getting caught up in this stuff, and she's involved in some foolish and some shady stuff, and then the police are involved, and it seems like she's getting arrested. But what's the real? Dawn played it smart. She got the dude on tape admitting what he did, And she called the police. I was like, good girl. And then what reward does she get from Billy for this? Him being angry with her because she did not clue him into the plan. I was just like, if another dude on this show comes through with their stupid man pain after the woman fixes their mess, like, stop. Like, Dawn made sure this dude went to jail. That's going to make it easier for Billy to get custody. And he's like, you're my wife. How could you keep that secret from me? I'm just like, oh my God, stop. I can't. Like, Emmerdale was bashing me over the head with how stupid men are. I'm a guy, I know we're dumb. But Jesus Christ, will they stop being dumb? Please, I need them to stop being dumb for 5 minutes. That was so on my goddamn nerves. She just went through all this, and he's like, you should have kept me in the loop. And then Will, too. Will was upset with her because she didn't keep him in the loop. Who fucking cares? The trash deadbeat ex is in jail. Stop.
I think the best part was she let Kim on it more than she let her dad in on it. Exactly. I don't want my dad to know. Please don't say anything. Don't get involved. It's like I have a plan. Just don't tell anybody about it. That's the first thing she said to her. I need money, but I'm going to give it back to you.
Good night, sis. Have a good night.
And she's like, what? And I'm like, yeah, just go along with it. And Kim's like, you know your dad's not going to like this. And I'm like, who cares if dad's not going to like it? She's getting rid of the dude so that her boyfriend can, or her husband can adopt their child.
Right. And so she should have been celebrated for that, not being whined to because why didn't you include me in the plot? I was like, stop, bruh. Are you going to be his dad? Isn't that what you wanted? Then shut the hell up.
Yep.
Shut the hell up. Okay, let's go to the guy I was screaming to shut the hell up the most. These past few weeks. See, last episode, I was celebrating this king. I was wishing for love and happiness in his life. I was criticizing other characters for talking crap to him. And then a month later, he proves that all the crap they were talking was 100% on point. What the hell, Noah? What the hell, Noah? Boy, I was so through with Noah right now. First of all, Noah is going to open his mouth to talk noise about Liv and Vinny's sex lives. They are married. Whatever the hell they do or don't do is none of Noah's business. So he doesn't need to be opening his mouth talking about what married people do at all. Especially when so much of his recent story has been about sexual impropriety when it comes to him. So the fact that Emmerdale would have that character just running his mouth about the sex lives of other people, like how many people have said to him previously and this week, you're a sexual predator, you're a sexual predator, you're a sexual predator. I have refused to believe this, but I do believe he is a dumbass kid because he's been acting like a dumbass all month. And I'm over it. I was like, what? You know? And so he gets upset because he's dumbly talking noise about Liv and Vinny at the house where Vinny lives. So Vinny overhears him and is just like, why don't you shut up, you know, saying what the hell you're saying about, you know, me and my wife. And then he leaves and then Noah's like, oh, he's such a geek. And Samson's like, nah, bro, you out of line. You need to shut the fuck up, right? So he's all upset that everybody isn't taking his side and being a dumbass. So what does he decide to do? He gets a letter addressed to Mrs. Vinny Dingle, whatever the hell Vinny's last name is. And he's like, what? And so he opens the letter. And then he finds out that the engagement that the engagement party that people are going to, where everybody thinks is an engagement, it's actually going to be to celebrate the nuptials because, or should be to celebrate the nuptials because the letter reveals that the Liv and Vinny are already married.
It's the marriage certificate.
There it is. So Noah, with his messy self, goes straight to Mandy and spills the beans. I was like, you damn brat. And he's pleased with himself for this. All because he's upset that he was caught out and called out for talking noise about what Liv and Vinny do in the bedroom. Unacceptable. I wasn't here for it. And then Noah continues this dumbness because now all of a sudden, so I think I said last show, a Noah, Samson, and who is Dan's cute daughter? Who's Amelia.
Amelia.
Yes. Amelia, Samson, Noah. That's the love story that I wanted to see play out. We got some of it this week, but now I see Noah isn't worthy. I need Amelia and Samson to happen. That's it, right? And what's my problem with Noah? So Noah continues to, you know, spit his poison all throughout the village. Now he's taking shots at Samson, who has no time for his foolishness. And every time Samson is around, he's just proclaiming loudly, "Shut up, virgin boy, virgin boy, virgin boy." Like, being a virgin is this huge thing that needs to be mocked. Like, what are you doing? Again, this is a character that is criticized for being sexually inappropriate, and he's running his mouth about Vinny and Liv's sex life. He's screaming that Samson is a virgin to everyone within earshot. That's inappropriate. So I am no longer defending Noah. See, he is setting up bad karma. So anything that happens to him at this point, he deserves. And see, now all of a sudden I see that little girl sniffing around that kicked him to the curb to get, who's David's son? The dummy. Who's the dummy? Who slept with Andrea? Not Andrea. The other one, the pedophile. Jacob. There it is. Jacob. Okay.
Jacob.
So, you know. So, you know, Noah got dumped for Jacob. Now the girl that dumped him for Jacob is looking at Noah like, ooh, he's a bad boy because he's being inappropriate. I'm going to act interested again, right? You see, if they get back together and she cheats on him again, I'm not going to care because he deserves it because he is screwing up his own karma for no reason. You know?
Yep.
Talking shit about sweet characters, you know? So I was over Noah. So yeah, what did you think? How did you feel about Noah and his fuckery these past couple of weeks?
You see, Noah's been a dink since Charity screwed up every chance he got for joining the military. So, so it's just like, I don't care. I kind of, and as much as I hate the character, little twin girl there that has a crush on Samson.
Yes.
I'm for that too. I wouldn't be against an Amelia little twin Samson.
That's Bob's thing daughter, either. Right?
Yeah.
Let me. I can't remember her name. I know she was in that April story.
She was the one who bullied April.
Yes. What is her name? That's fine.
But, I would not be against that either, even though, you know, she's a child. But she's old enough to know what she's, you know. She and Amelia are the same age, I think. I think Amelia's a little bit older. But, I mean, like, Samson knows better. Samson knows when to stop. They kissed once, and they knew that was all that they needed to do. It's just, like, Samson knows when to stop, and Noah doesn't, and yes. Noah needs to pull his head out of his backside before he ends up dead in a gutter because some girl got cheated on by him and got revenge on him or something, you know?
Yes.
And, I mean, it'll give Charity some amazing story, but, I mean, like, he just needs to stop or else the world is gonna, like, literally gang up on him. And considering, who is her face's dad is like a gangster.
Mm-hmm. I wasn't even thinking about that.
Let's just keep in mind what he can do to Noah if he keeps on this nonsense.
Right. Yes. And Kathy. Kathy is the name. So it's Kathy, April, and Samson. That's an interesting pairing potential as well. You know?
Because I mean, like, you can tell Samson has a little thing for Amelia, and you can tell Samson has a little thing for Kathy, too, because they kiss. But he knows that Amelia has a thing for Noah, mm-hmm. so he's not trying to pursue that until Noah, in his infinite wisdom, said, no amount of makeup can make you cute.
Which was a fucking lie. We have already clocked that on this show. Homeboy is on point with that girl's makeup. She's looking beautiful. You know what I'm saying? So, and Emmerdale are doing right by that character.
Yes, it's like, I love Samson. I love that they're incorporating him more.
Yes.
I love that they're actually finally giving him and Kathy storylines that they can get behind rather than, you know, just having them on the sidelines.
100%. Because all those actors are good. That little cutie who plays Kathy is fantastic as well. I thought she was great in April's storyline, and I loved how supportive she was of April initially, and I thought, oh my God, she's such a good little actress. And then they made the twist that she was the bully, and I was like, what? This sweetheart? Are you crazy? What? But the way they played that was so good and so rich and showed how much she could do. So I actually want to see her with a love interest. Like, at one point, I would have thought it was Noah, but see, because, you know, I think Samson and Amelia have something special, so I'd like to see that. I think Kathy and Noah might have potential, but right now, they write Noah too stupid. I don't even want Kathy with him. They could bring on a new cute little kid for her. You know what I'm saying? But Noah's on my nerves right now, girl. I can knock the door right now. Shucks. All right, baby girl. Let's switch into the scenes of the week. So, what did Emmerdale do to make you say cheers over the past couple of weeks?
Well, we already talked about most of them. I loved Marlon's inner monologue scenes. I thought they were all amazing. I thought that, I mean, like, my brain just was like, oh my God, I don't want to be in that state. I would never want to be in that state where you're just sitting there choking on your words because you can't speak, but in your head you're hearing everything that you want to say. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, that was beautifully done. I loved about 95% of Friday's episode, last Friday's episode.
It was so good.
All the conversations that were had. We basically talked about all my scenes of the week already. So you can go ahead and do yours. We basically talked about all mine already.
Yeah, well, we'll just stick where you left off. So, yes, that Friday episode was excellent. And I have like a little thread. Well, we'll just talk about one of the scenes that was there and then something kind of related. So let's start with Kane and Sam. Boy, that scene where Sam walks into the house as Kane is there. I think he was doing dishes, and he's looking at the table like, man, I haven't seen the table this messy since Lisa was alive. Oh, my God. Every time she's finished, I'm like, oh, I miss Lisa. And, you know, Kane and him are talking about, you know, mortality, because the link to Marlon is because, you know, Marlon has now had this stroke at his younger age. Belle goes to him, to Kane later, and talks to him about how she's concerned about him because, you know, she doesn't want his son Kyle to have to deal with, you know, what April had to deal with losing parents, or what she has had to deal with losing a parent, you know?
Yeah.
And Kane has taken that to heart. So enter Sam. You know, after Kane has spent some time, you know, kind of spending time with his son. And, you know, they're talking about Lisa. And, you know, I think Sam asks Kane, like, well, no, I think Kane asks Sam, you know, like, do you miss Lisa? And I was like, oh, so sweet.
Like, we all miss Lisa.
Like, see, we don't need Lydia for this. Kane can do this. And Sam's like, you know, man, yeah, like, who doesn't, you know? And,
all
know,
of us miss Lisa.
And it's like, you know, of course what's happening to Marlon is making me think about a lot of things, you know, and I think, you know, Kane mentions how Belle was talking to him and, you know, he's kind of concerned about, you know, Kyle. And then he asked, you know, like, how do you deal with Samson and, like, you know, those kind of concerns? And Sam's like, well, I mean, I went through this with Samson when he lost his own mother. And it's like, oh. And then, you know, you basically see two guys that are raising children, that are around Marlon's age and that are sitting there thinking about, you know, the reality of death, you know, and the reality of, you know, what kind of life and legacy are you leaving your children if you're just gone, right?
Yeah.
And so as a guy who is about their age, like I felt all that, right? Because, you know, I'm 42, going to be 43 pretty soon. And, you know, when I turned 40, I didn't really have too much of a life crisis or anything like that. Or perhaps maybe I did, because see, when I was 39, I got back into school. So, you know, I'm still working on my master's now. So maybe that was me trying to shift my life, right? Now, this year, you know, I'm focusing more on health and just kind of making sure that I'm as healthy as I need to be. Because I recognize, you know, I'm getting older. Time is not reversing for me. And I just want to, you know, look as good as I can and feel as good as I can so that I can, you know, lead a healthy life and be kind of, you know, as, I guess, in the best shape that I can so that both physically and mentally I can be there for others as much as I want to in my profession. Because, you know, for some of the work that we do, you know, and I think that speaks to my job and your job as well, like you're dealing with people a lot and you have to be like sharp and on it so that you are like, so they don't drive you crazy. You are snapping at them all the doggone time. Like, it takes some work. So I'm trying to do what I can to, you know, make sure I'm good so I can be a good force in the world for other people. So I thought it was really cool to see Emmerdale showing a reflection of that in how, you know, Cain and Sam are thinking about what happens with Marlon and, you know, how, you know, Sam's already been living a life where he's an honorable man, right? Cain has been, I think, more focused on that. Emmerdale has kind of focused his character on that recently, because you remember we were talking about Liam and Cain and that excellent conversation where Cain said his biggest regret was not being there for his kids. And now we see him being there for Kyle, who, in our time watching, he kept the most distant, right?
Yeah.
But now he's like really trying to be there for him and make sure Kyle's good. Like, I thought that scene was just, fantastic. So, yeah. What did you think about, I don't think we talked about that particular scene too much. What did you think about those two getting together?
You see, I liked that scene a lot. I think between that scene and the scene where, you know, Amy is just, or, you know, there was another one that I liked too, where Cain brings Kyle home from quad biking or whatever, and Amy is the one who tells him that Marlon had stroke, and Moira finds him there in the dark by himself while, you know, Amy is somewhere, I forgot where they said she was at, and they talk it out too, and it's just like, and when you remember that he had the aneurysm, I'm reading up on what they're doing to him today or tonight, and it's the same operation where I had my aneurysm, but they caught it early, but, you know, and I'm just like, I remember that, and I cried, and just bringing that back, I was just like, oh my God, that hurts. That hurts so much, but this conversation is so good. And then you go to the, you know, the Friday episode, which was like 3 days later or something. I don't remember. It was 2 or 3 days later. And they're talking, you know, they're not single dads per se, obviously. Well, Sam is, but Cain's not. But Cain hasn't been paying as much attention to his kids, like you said. And now, you know, he is getting more active in their lives and stuff. But Sam's always been really, really active with Samson. So it's like between April and Samson, if, you know, either of them died, they wouldn't have either of their parents left. And they would feel abandoned and stuff. And it's just like, oh my gosh, this kind of hurts a little bit, you know. But it's just like, Watching those two talk it out, and actually even Belle, you know, neither of us are a fan of Belle, but she had her poignant moment in Cain's head too.
Yes.
That, hey, I've lost a parent, you've lost a parent, you know, we've all lost a parent in some way that we weren't ready for.
Right.
And, you know, you may not have liked him because God knows neither Chaz or Ken liked him. But, you know, at the same time, still a parent, you had to, you know, work it through your head. It's just like, it's tough to hear, but at the same time, it was a good conversation for all of them to have, and it got in Kane's head, and I'm kind of glad, because I kind of liked the sad, vulnerable Kane in this week's episode, because it was a very nice change in what we've seen in the past recent
100% mom.
Little bit.
Yes, I agree with every word. You know, I'm all about them writing Kane as a quality character, and you know, it's always done. You loved it. Loved it. Yep. So my second to last scene of the week. Now, I already talked about some. So that was the conversation that Rona and her mom had during that Paul Rondell episode, where the mom brought up how, you know, losing her friend to COVID, spurred her coming back to, you know, see about Rona. And yeah, one particular line that I wanted to point out, Rona's mom said something to her to the effect of, you know, I was hard on you because I was building character. Mm-hmm. And Rona said, that didn't help build my character. That just bred my resentment. And I was like, you know, because that's real. I think there are parents out there who think this whole, like, being rude and hateful and dismissive to your child is some character building exercise, when really what it does is it creates distance between your child and yourself. Like, loving mm-hmm. and being open and understanding and empathetic, that's the way to go to build character and nurture and shape character. So I appreciated that being pointed out, because I think that's something that a lot of parents do. I know I've seen it in my own life. I've seen it, you know, in my, you know, circle of friends and extended, you know, those types of, you know, negative actions can impact you for decades, right? And mm-hmm. so that's an important lesson to learn. If you're trying to build character, treating your child like crap and putting them down all the time, that is not the way to do it. And I thought the way that Emmerdale had pointed that out with those two characters, solid. Love the way that was written in. I thought that was great. And then my last scene of the week, I mentioned earlier, but I'm just going to say it again the way I've had it written down. Patty helping Marlon see that he's just like Patrick. Right?
Yes.
I gave love to it. As I mentioned earlier, Marlon was running around talking about, oh my God, Rona's the worst person in the world because she kept a secret on us. So, and Patty's like, so your reaction to learning about your wife's secret is to emotionally manipulate her until she feels like garbage, which she already felt like.
Yep.
Who does that remind you of? And then a light bulb goes off in Marlon's head, and he makes up with his girl. I was like, you see, an effective use of that damn just like Patrick of Maxine from Hollyoaks.
I was just like, you be Pierce or Patrick? And then in my brain, I'm like, they're the same person. Yep.
Exactly. So, you know, I'm cool for characters pointing out when others are being manipulative in the same way. And I was thinking the same. I was thinking, you know, before Patty said it, I mean, the way Marlon is manipulating Rona and like gaslighting her and thinking like she's the worst way in the world, that's kind of the same way Pierce was treating her. And then Emmerdale mm-hmm. showed that they knew it by having the words come out of Patty's mouth. And I was here for it, you know? So there was a lot of drama to be gained from the reveal of who Marcus was. And I have really liked how it's played out, because it led to some conversations that needed to happen between Rona and Marlon. It led to a closeness in their relationship, which has seen both proposed. And now we've got this fantastic storyline where Marlon is going to have to recover from a stroke. And that is reverberating throughout all of Emmerdale. So as I said at the start, it was frustrating, and definitely the moment where it happened, the stroke happened, it was timed to be the most sad and impactful. but I'm very interested in seeing how this plays out and hopefully how this helps the love of Marlon and Rona to grow. Because at this point, I think they got together, was it 2008? Have we been waiting for this coupling for like over a decade?
Over a decade, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So, because I remember it wasn't too long after I started watching Emmerdale that Rona was paired with him, because she was the first love interest I remember him having, and then the Patty thing infuriated me and made me hate Rona for years. But they're good together, and I think Emmerdale has set up a quality storyline that has, you know, the potential to play out excellent story for the next few months. So I'm here to see where it goes, and I think it'll be an interesting journey.
Yeah. Indeed.
Yes. That is all I got, baby girl. You got anything else?
No, I think we pretty much dissected this past 3 weeks of Emmerdale. Yes. from what was necessary to what wasn't.
Okay. So, well, then I guess with that, I will say that I'm at Brother Soap.
And I'm at Lindsay Amanda.
Thank you all so much for listening. And until next time, get vaxxed, wear a mask, and don't let COVID kick that ass. We already got Marlon in the hospital. We don't want none of y'all in there too.
No, we don't. It's okay. Like I already worked in one. Not necessarily. Don't need to see anyone else.
Exactly. Bye, y'all.
Bye.